that is how we were able to keep our prices competitive all this while. But if you want to have a sense of sovereignty, for example, then you a sense of security, then you think by producing your own grain corn, you might be more secure. It's too early to say anything. There are many parameters to fulfill. If you start your corn production and if you don't produce the required yield, it's not going to provide any security. It's going to be very expensive for us.
A few weeks ago, we spoke to Professor Jomo, who mentioned that the way Malaysia has approached our food production has been to prioritize plantations that are non-food growing, non-food growing plantations. And I'm just wondering, as an agricultural economist, how quickly can we make that shift? So we're not just growing the palm oil and the rubber, and we are, in fact, looking at ways to increase our food production, to increase our food security, particularly in that respect.
Now, let's take a step back. You know, for us to be food secure, producing everything that we consume doesn't guarantee food security. It guarantees availability. It gives you some sense of, security, maybe in terms of sovereignty. But it doesn't guarantee food security in a lot of sense. You know, you might produce, but at very high prices, then it's not going to contribute towards food security. And you have to understand the plantation sector is a sector that has driven the Malaysian economy. Jomo, of all the people, I think, understand that very well. So, but of course, issues surrounding the plantation sector that we also need to address. And since we are using almost 90% of our land on oil palm, maybe this is a good time to start thinking of diversifying. And if you go back to history, we actually diversified away from rubber into oil palm. And ironically, we are now putting almost all our eggs in one basket by using almost all of our agricultural land on oil palm. So
Shafiq, I want to if you can help us understand the way policymakers have approached the question of food and food production in this country. I mean, you brought up a very important principle that if we're not going to do, we're going to produce something in a cost-effective way, it's better to buy things. But there seems to be a critical asymmetry between imports and domestic production. And we seem to have tipped the balance into being a net importer at almost a critical level. Is that something that we can change? I mean, are there small steps that government can take in order to bring us into a much more balanced situation?
Well, yeah, by increasing efficiency, that is what we need to do. I think we need to understand that for us to increase production, we need to look at efficiency. We have to make sure that we use our resources properly. Being efficient is when we get the most out of our inputs. And the way to achieve that is through employing the right technology, smart agriculture, for example. Now, if we think that by producing our own corn is going to solve the problem of chicken feed, then we might be mistaken, because we still need to import fertilizer, and we can only produce nitrogen because we have natural gas, but we still have to import muriate of potash. We still have to import, phosphorus and potassium, because we don't have those in Malaysia. So, see, Malaysia cannot be an otaki. Malaysia is a small trading nation. We will always have to trade, and we have to be very careful with the choices that we make. Having a knee-jerk reaction is always not a good thing. See, right now, corn prices are high. We think that if we produce our corn, we can produce at a profit. But what if the prices go down later? I'm not saying that we shouldn't go into corn production. What I'm saying here is we have to be we have to be very careful in what we do. If we want to do it, we make sure that we do it right. If we can get the right yield, yes, by all means, go ahead. But to produce just for the sake of producing and giving us this false sense of sovereignty or security, then it's going to cost the country a lot of money.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Professor Shafiq Siddiq from UPM's Institute of Plantation Studies there. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more on this topic. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. We're discussing the surge in food prices and what must be done now to address the issue. Joining us on the show is Dr. Serena Cheomar. She's the Deputy Director of Research at Khazanah Research Institute, where she focuses on policies related to food, agriculture and sustainability. Dr. Serena, we understand that the team at KRI went to meet with the Prime Minister's Office Economic Action Council earlier this week, and this to propose the flexible ceiling and subsidy prices. I'd like to understand a little bit better this proposal, the nuances of the proposal, particularly in how it compares to having fixed ceiling price.
Okay, Melissa, I mean, if I can give three key words for this, it is dynamic, it cuts down bureaucracy, and it manages expectations. So what do I mean by that? A moving price means it is very dynamic and it adjusts based on global or whatever you choose as your reference point. So in this case, just as an example, if you have the chicken industry, what we are impacted by, like say the maize prices, right? So we follow the maize prices, and at the front, we already say, okay, if maize prices go above 250 per USD per metric ton, the price is 9 ringgit, for example. If the price goes below 250, the price is this amount. And if it goes below 200, there's no price ceiling, right? So at the front, you already tell everyone that's what's going to happen. Now, that manages people's expectations, which is very, very important. Because you got to imagine, if you're a chicken producer, now, your chicken takes about 48 days to grow, right? You need 48 days in advance to start thinking about how many chickens to buy, how many chicken feed to collect, and you need to plan ahead. You can't have surprises coming in the next day. So when you have these moving prices and you set up at the front telling everyone with full transparency, if the prices go down, do expect ceiling might change. And when you do that, there's no surprises in the supply chain. And when there are no surprises, supply becomes more consistent. And what I mean by reducing bureaucracy, I'll give you guys an example, right? Now, the chicken price ceiling was set in February, right, at 8 ringgit 90 cent. At that time, the maize price was at 292 USD per metric ton. So considering that price, doing all the calculations, or it was, you know, decided to be at 890, and then to compensate the producers, we give them a subsidy of 60 cents per kilogram. That's assuming it's at 292. But guys, 2 months down the line, maize prices went up 19%, right? And you know what? Farmers had to wait to suffer, then they had to find a place to complain, and then when they find a place to complain, they were hurt. When they were hurt, only then government need to find time to meet up and discuss about it. By the time all of that happened, you know, the industry would have suffered. So we want to get rid of all of that. We want to be as transparent, as efficient as possible. So that's why KRI proposed this method. Now, just to clarify here, we didn't say the chicken industry must have a ceiling price, moving price, ceiling price. We said if you feel that you need a ceiling price, a moving ceiling price is a good strategy to adopt. There's also another strategy that we do say is a good strategy, which is a direct cash transfer. So you guys, if we have extra time during this interview, let's go back to direct cash transfer. But that it is about moving ceiling price.
Right, Serena, could you help us understand what the consequences of the existing policies have been on food producers, chicken farmers in particular. We hear stories that chicken farms are under extreme pressure, and that that in fact some of them are going out of business. What do you understand is actually happening on the ground?
So, you know, I mean, the best case scenario is that when you put the ceiling price at 8 ringgit 90, there is a compensation, because, you know, it is pretty, you know, pretty, it's a hard number and people can't really make money out of it. But to compensate, the government said, we will give you 60 cent subsidy. It's just that in terms of the delivery of the subsidy, there were some issues, and some farmers, they had some timeline gaps. So they also didn't claim. Some didn't have licenses, so they can't even claim. There was some bureaucracy kind of issue. So, you know, you couple everything together, it just became a little bit messy. And of course, with the ceiling price being like that, fixed, and then prices going up, people are getting tighter and tighter. What happened was that in order to, it's a business thing, right? People have to do business. So when the gap is too tight, something's got to give. So what some producers had to do was that they just had to use cheaper feed. And what happened when you use cheaper feed? Your chicken just didn't grow very fast. And what happened? When that happened, you have a supply issue, right? Because there's just not enough chicken at the right size to be sold. So, you know, there are these effects happening. Now, I can't say the government is fully wrong. They're really trying to help. But, you know, there are just challenges that we just need to adjust as we move. And that's why I'm very happy that the government decided they're open enough to explore a moving price, ceiling price, as, you know, as a way to continue on addressing this issue. Because, okay, so Sharad, food prices is not going to go down as long as the Ukraine crisis happen, as long as global fertilizer prices stay up, inflation is going to continue.
Can I follow up on that just very quickly? Are you expecting the food price trajectory to increase, or as some are calling a food crisis, a global food crisis, are you expecting this to continue longer? I read an S&P report that that cited that it could be years and not months, as we are anticipating. What do you think, Serena?
Melissa, I wish I have a crystal ball to tell you the answer. I don't, but I do know, like I say, if the fertilizer price, global fertilizer prices continue to be high, particularly from China, with the coal prices being very high in China, if that continues, and if Ukraine and Russia crisis continues, then yes, global food price crisis is going to continue. And it didn't help that we're recovering from the pandemic. So, you know, couple everything together, you get this really unsavory food that's happening, unsavory thing that's happening.
All right, I'll come back to the moving ceiling price that was proposed and adopted. Can I ask you what would ensure the effective, successful implementation of the ceiling price? You talked a little bit about transparency in knowing what the different prices are of the inputs along the supply chain. What might hinder this moving ceiling price from being effective for producers?
Well, I can say as much as I want, but, you know, I really hope it becomes as effective as possible. But one thing that needs to happen is that everyone got to huddle together, the industry players, the government, everyone got to huddle together and together agree on the price breakdown. So if the price is like this, I agree ceiling price is like this, this is the best price. If it really goes down, we don't need subsidies anymore. And everyone should stick to that. And another thing not to forget, not only we should stick to that, you know, everyone agree to it and stick to it, but there should also be a timeline, Melissa. It can't be on forever. This is a short-term solution. So there must be a timeline, maybe like a 3 months or 4 months. And then, so it's moving price until this date, whichever comes first, whether the price goes down first or, you know, you hit that timeline. So with that together and people working together, hopefully we can come to a successful outcome.
Right, Serena, so the focus in our conversation so far has been on the supply side. I mean, what about demand? You know, we hear stories of, or I've read stories of, you know, Pakistan asking its citizens not to drink so much tea or reduce the number of cups of tea they drink. You know, is there a role to be played in terms of the way we now look at our nutrition, the way we deal with food waste? Are these other constituent parts of the solution, as it were?
Well, one thing I never want to hear is us telling Malaysians to eat less chicken and eggs, because that's a very good source of protein and we should be very proud. In fact, by the way, Sharad, do you know that Malaysia regionally has one of the cheapest chicken? KRI, actually, my colleagues, we rank the prices of chicken and we convert everything, Indonesia, Philippines, Thailand, Malaysia, everything to ringgit, and we actually did pretty well. So chicken is a really good source of protein, and I hope we don't come to a point where we need to eat less of it. Wastage, of course, there's always that part where we shouldn't be wasting food. We should be more cautious about that. Yeah, I mean, of course.
Serena, in the few minutes that we have left, I want to ask you about this direct cash transfer. So you said moving ceiling prices is one option, one policy intervention. Direct, why would direct cash transfers be a good alternative?
Okay, so in theory, if we just look at it from you know, bigger things, in the general things, is that blanket subsidies has always been very an inefficient way to help the people, because when you do blanket subsidy, even the rich gets it. Multinational fast food chains enjoy these subsidies. You know, people who don't need it enjoy it. When you do targeted, you know, by right, you are targeting people who actually need it. But there's a big but. The big but here is that it is as good as the database of the people who needs it, right? So if we do not have a good capture of the B4T, let's say, for example, then we're not effectively, you know, providing that cash transfer to them. And another big but here is that, yes, we are doing direct cash transfer, but what about the invisible people, the migrant workers who are undocumented? You know, they're going to be lost in this. They're going to fall through the cracks. So direct cash transfer is a really good solution, but we must make sure we tidy things up as we go along. So, yes.
Was the government receptive to this proposal? What was the reaction when you made this proposal, Serena?
Which one? The moving price ceiling or the...
When the direct cash transfer, when you...
I think they were the ones who were thinking about it. So I just told them it's something to really think about and it's a good idea. I think they were already planning for this.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. Dr. Serena Cheh Umar of Khazanah Research Institute, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.